Welcome to SciTech Culture with Steve Kern and Ben Warner, where we examine science, technology and culture in the 21st century. Visit our website at scitechculture.com.
And we're back after a little bit of time off, but it's good to see you again, Steve. And what a topic to kick us off with, this upcoming IPO. Well, I guess by the time we publish this, it might have actually happened. The IPO for SpaceX. And thanks for putting it on the radar. It was quite interesting just looking over it that, it was I guess because it's got Elon Musk attached, it's going to attract a certain level of enthusiastic vigor in coverage, shall we say, in terms of what it means, etc. All this talk about it targeting the biggest ever stock market debut, putting Musk on the road to being a trillionaire, because I'm sure he'll be happy if that happens. And it's fascinating because there's also I don't know if you saw this with surfacing more stories about it, but I noticed that the feed was giving me a whole lot of stories of concerns that people should be looking out for as well, because it's not a I think it was largely around it's not like the big money maker in the sense of it. In respect to its valuation that is being proposed for it, and there was a whole lot of things. We can talk about that a bit later, but it was just interesting that there was a whole lot of things around concerns around if it gets caught up in index funds and all this sort of thing that everyone gets, that everyone might, well, anyone that's investing might have something, and you might get exposed to it a bit, and maybe if the valuation ends up being at the top of the market and then it never recovers afterwards, all that kind of stuff. But fascinating because, and I jokingly said to you in the text message back, better not blow up on the launch pad. but what were your initial thoughts when you saw it?
I think everyone's been waiting for this moment for a while now. It's been on the cards. But I guess what's quite mind-bending about this particular situation, let's not even really just worry about the IPO, is that there's no parallel for this at any time in history. So firstly, the sort of money that we're talking about is normally what you would expect a nation to spend, and just go back 60 years and imagine America in the space race and the equivalent of what they spent. Here is an individual with the means to raise the capital, not only to turn themselves into a trillionaire, but to do it on the basis that SpaceX is going to take us to new worlds. So, look, obviously we know there's a big AI play at the moment, and there's a big AI play in this. We know that Starlink is going to be very successful. It already is very successful. We know that, data centers in space sound like a good idea. I don't know how heavy they are, but it sounds like a good idea. So I guess everything that has been pitched as part of this IPO makes it sound like it's a no-brainer. If you've got the cash, if you can get in, buy, and you'll get it back. I guess the only thing that we have to compare this with would be Amazon 30 years ago. Amazon exists today, and when we had the dot-com boom, and I don't really want to go into that too much, but there was a lot of money lost, and Amazon shares certainly went down well below what people purchased them for, but Amazon only had to start selling stuff on Earth with a new business model. All I'm saying is that this is all a promise of something happening not on this planet. I don't know, a bit like AI, which we've spoken about, I don't actually know how it's going to pay.
Well, that kind of aligns with all these articles I've been reading about what the concerns are. But I take your point there. But just picking up on that, I mean, the best case you could probably see in this is maybe practical, pragmatic use cases, which I think you were kind of alluding to there. Does it start picking up even more of the I guess what NASA would have been traditionally doing? Do they start picking up work for other countries and doing it for them, etc.? Or private individuals who've got the means to want to, you know, do their own traveling or whatever. On the flip side, I'm kind of looking at it based on what you're describing there, that, you know, the two things that stands out is Elon Musk has always been talking about, you know, going to Mars and all this sort of stuff. And this promise that, you know, SpaceX will expand and do more things in space, but it also could potentially, I don't want to say it's a pipe dream, but it could also be way oversold in terms of what you could actually get out of it.
Well, I agree. And then there are other questions. So, and this is comes back to the lack of precedent, but in the colonial exploration era, you know, somebody would raise the money, just like Musk, sail to a new land, and let's use Antarctica as a good example, and then would claim that land in the name of their country. Now, is that what Musk is going to do? Is that NASA's job? If Musk gets there first, what happens when an individual gets there first? Antarctica, I believe, has similar or is the basis for treaty laws in international space. I guess it's international or just space, off-world spaces. Can he claim it for himself as a territory? And what would happen if other nations decided that they had a beef with him and took some away? Would he then expect the US to come to his aid? I don't know. These questions are very interesting questions. They all have just as much possibility as him setting up colonies on other worlds. Has anyone thought about them?
I dare say not. I was just picturing the word Mars TM in superscript written there. But again, it just kind of like highlights, you know, like the whole idea of, you know, that the overpromising, I think, would be the way to, and the overhype. It's a nice idea. Like if it was someone else who didn't speak like Musk, who was running the thing and had, took a more pragmatic sort of wording and language to it, like I was saying about that more sort of pragmatic use case. Oh, he sends rockets up to do this, putting more Starlink stuff around the place, you know, connecting things where there's practical business cases for it. But again, maybe just to also think about like the internet hype era that we're living in, that there's just this ability to like really imagine that this could be like the start of a whole new era, but we might need to temper our expectations when it comes to that.
Well, this is partially my point. So I don't doubt that SpaceX can achieve what they're talking about. What I don't understand is what the reality of the time frame is. And then on top of that, what the reality for a return is. So if he's saying that these data centers in space will be built sometime in the next 20 to 30 years, then I'm inclined to say, sure. I don't know what's going to happen to your money in the meantime. Are you going to get a return on it, or is it just locked up until he nails that one? These are all questions. I mean, let's face it. I mean, when it comes to Musk, yeah, you know, any investment in anything Musk does, I think these days, no matter what anyone says, is more with the heart than with the head. But, you know,
well, particularly, and I didn't have time to fact check it, but I saw something about he was, for a publicly listed company, he was retaining the majority share ownership, which would give him complete voting rights over the decisions that are made across the company, which would then think with your head there before you start investing.
Well, knowing his, you know, like supplement stack and things like that.
Well, Twitter turned out all right, didn't it?
Well, it all turns out all right because he just, you know, will keep fashioning things until they work okay for him. But what works for him, well, i.e. him being a trillionaire, may not make you a trillionaire. And I think that's what some people fail to understand. I've read that a number of funds are not particularly happy with the structure that he's proposing because of the fact the power rests with him, and he's just basically taking everyone else along for a Musk ride. So yes, I don't know, but it's huge, and it's completely unprecedented that somebody could possibly make a play in something that's completely off-world. I mean, this redraws human sort of concepts of economics, really, when you think about it, because data, okay, you can get up and down. So you're talking low Earth orbit, but off-world, it's not like we've got trading partners off-world, not yet anyway.
Well, so, it's the brave new world that he's trying to get into.
Asteroid mining, I don't know.
There's a whole show called The Expanse on Amazon that you can go check out. Maybe that's where we'll end up.
Paid for by Jeff.
Yeah, absolutely. Another side story with this was this idea of SpaceX signing a pre-IPO deal to provide AI computing to Google, which seemed to be, if I read it correctly, a way to generate some revenue ahead of the deal, just to shore things up a little bit. But again, it's like you were saying, it's all tied in, you know, like get the combination, not just even the suggestion of AI and this SpaceX deal going together, just like is the icing on the cake for me, given how AI is doing these days.
Yeah, well, I mean, you piece all this stuff together and it makes a compelling pitch. I might be saying that there are a lot of unknowns here, but geez, it's compelling. I think if anyone was to look to the future and think about what Musk has done so far, wow. But the other question is what happens if something happens to Musk? You know, if you put him in the same genre, say, as Steve Jobs, you know, him relative to Musk.com, you know, as Jobs.com was to Apple, you know, okay, if he goes, I'm sure you can find a board of people that will kind of make similar decisions, but they're not going to make them in the same way. They're not going to be so outrageous and they're not going to be so risky. And, you know, for all the knockers that Elon has, the one thing he's shown repeatedly is he's willing to take risks, and those risks have paid off. So, if anything happens to him, if he doesn't live long enough to actually get SpaceX properly into space and it does blow up on the launch pad, yeah, I don't know. I don't know that there's any single person that could step in and do what he's doing.
Absolutely. If any rate, we're through the looking glass, maybe we'll see what ends up happening with this in the end.
Well, I'm sure you and I will be here for another 20 or 30 years, so we'll be reporting back, everyone.
Absolutely. Touch wood on that. Okay. And just finally, just to change of pace, I threw this in at the end, completely different topic, but I had...
Is it?
Yes. Well, it's still space related, I guess.
It's still about domination of the universe.
So I had contemplated the idea of us doing like a bit of a review of a lot, like the Star Wars film franchise. And we could still do that because you've seen more of them now. So, what I was thinking of, at least just as a prelude to that, is this whole discussion around whether Star Wars: A New Hope or The Empire Strikes Back, which one's the better film? And I know that gets people into an argument. One thing I'll say off the top: those two films, from my perspective, are peak Star Wars. After that, Return of the Jedi, maybe a third of it was peak Star Wars. But then after that, not that I didn't enjoy what came after that, but I don't think it sort of reached that level of, you know, when you think of the concept of what was put on screen, those two films are really the benchmark as far as I'm concerned. But then it becomes, well, which one's better? And there's the argument, obviously, that The Empire Strikes Back was better, kind of Godfather Part 2 style. Personally, I'm always actually thinking that A New Hope was the better film, because if you actually think about it, you don't need any other Star Wars film, TV show, series, whatever that's come out to watch that film, because you don't need any other point of reference. You can just watch that cold and it's fine. Whereas I think with The Empire Strikes Back, you do. So, but that's not to say The Empire Strikes Back's not a good film. It's just that it's a sequel. Like, it's very clearly a sequel to something else. At least that's my perspective on it anyway.
Oh, I couldn't agree more with you. Look, Empire Strikes Back is one of my favourite Star Wars films, no question. But it's sandwiched in the middle of Star Wars. I can't even remember what the original title is.
A New Hope.
A New Hope and Return of the Jedi. Yeah, there we go. So it's sandwiched in between. And I think that for me, when I saw Empire Strikes Back, you've got A New Hope right with you, and it's the continuation, and the first part of Empire Strikes Back is gripping when they're on the ice planet, and you know, and then it does fall away sort of in the middle, but then it picks up again at the end and you've got the shock reveal of Darth Vader, you know. So for me, it was, I always preferred Empire Strikes Back, but you couldn't enjoy Empire Strikes Back without having seen the original Star Wars first.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. And I think that, you know, better film, maybe not, more enjoyable. Well, if you've seen A New Hope, yes.
Yeah, well, that's why we love these things, and they're subjective. because, I mean, ultimately, like I said, both of them are fantastic. I think, you know, for me, it's clear The Empire Strikes Back has more depth to it. There's more going on in terms of the nuances, I guess, because it wasn't quite as good guys versus bad guys scenario, like straight up, I think, in The Empire Strikes Back. So it's difficult because you can kind of see the pros and cons with both. But yeah, that was kind of where I was sitting, because like I said, if I was going to recommend, this is your entree into Star Wars, I'm going to be sending him to A New Hope first.
Oh, well, you've got to see them in that order. Even if you were to watch all 9 Star Wars films, you'd have to start with A New Hope.
But Lucas would want you to start with The Phantom Menace, of course, but we won't go there.
I actually think if you watch them in the order that he made them, you're probably pretty close to the best telling of the story, because as I found, going back to the prequels, much, much later than anyone else probably, I was amazed at how much or how rich the backstory was. Some of it you could say was a little bit overdone, but I was impressed with the backstory and how it unlocks so much enjoyment of those first 3 films. Anyway,
absolutely.
We could talk about this for days as well,
and we might pick that up again at some point in the future. It's a good thing to talk about.
Yeah, it is. Wow, Star Wars is one of those things you can talk about forever, and you'll still be able to talk about it again tomorrow.
Absolutely. All right, we might wrap it up there. And just as a final thought, given this theme that we're on, we might have to do an Alien versus Aliens discussion at some point as well.
Yeah, and over time, the perspective on that changes as well.
Absolutely. All right, so that's it for this week's episode. We'll catch you next time.